The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for September 30th, 2017, the last day of the month. So happy early October. Last weekend, Brian and I were in Boston for the New England Builders Ball. The show was a great success. It raised $2,000 for the three charities involved, including the Boston Cyclists Union, the East Coast Greenway, and Mass Bike. And it was great to meet some of you in person, too. Thanks to all of you who turned out and who came up and said, you listen to the show. We like that. This weekend, the KMC CrossFest is getting underway in Connecticut with cross season in full swing. I have author Paul Maunder on the show this evening. His new book, Rainbows in the Mud, The Intoxicating World of Cyclocross, is just out this month. It is a beautifully written story of the 2015-2016 cross season, delving into the characters, the sport, and the beauty of our wintertime cycling passions. Paul will be with me in the second half of the show. First up, though, is Ian Dilley. I've always thought of Ian as a freelance journalist. He's written several books, including The Price of Gold and The Cyclist's Bucket List, as well as too many great articles to enumerate for publications such as Bicycling, Outside, and Men's Journal. Now Ian has taken on the task of full-time editor-in-chief, or as I like to call it, head of production, to the newest edition of Flow Sports, flowbikes.com. Flow Sports is the innovator in live digital sports and original content, and Flow Bikes will bring all of the variety of cycling to your digital devices via a subscription. We'll learn all about Flow Bikes in a moment. After a short break, I was able to snag Brian for a chat. We'll delve into a variety of topics, including tubeless tires and what happens in fall, and a little bit about the two bikes that he owns, which are very beautiful machines. So without further ado, let's head on down to Austin, Texas, and talk with Flow Bikes' Ian Dilley. Hi, Ian. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. It's good to talk with you again.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
So I could just say what's new, but why don't you tell us? What's going on?
Well, I just took a position as the senior editor for Flow Bikes.
Before we went on air, you said something to me about it's your first real job. What does that mean?
Well, I have been a freelance writer, primarily a magazine features writer for the past 10 years, primarily working for a bicycling magazine, but also, you know, done work for Outside Magazine and Men's Journal and Texas Monthly and a number of general interest publications. And so this is a full-time salaried position with a website that does live streams events and also creates content around those events and covers the sport inside and out on a daily basis.
I do want to know about Flow Bikes. It is part of an organization called Flow Sports, and it's basically an online organization. Tell me exactly how the site works, and then we'll get into the cycling part of it.
Yeah, so the backstory is pretty interesting. It was started by two brothers, Mark and Martin Floriani, and they were both Division I athletes. One was a track runner at the University of Texas here in Austin, where I live and where the company is based, and Martin was a Division I wrestler. And about 10 or 11 years ago, they started traveling around in the country recording track races, collegiate track races and collegiate wrestling events, and putting them up on the internet and doing interviews with athletes and, you know, basically capitalizing on the idea that this was content that they wanted to see, that they were interested in, and no one was able to see it, and started gaining some following and gaining attraction. And, you know, as live streaming has, the technology has become more robust. Obviously, they've made that the center of what they do. And so there are two sites that they started with, Flow Track and Flow Wrestling, are, you know, if you're deep in the wrestling or track community, those are kind of your go-to sites. And they've since been expanding into other sports. So, you know, they have everything from football to basketball to volleyball, dance, cheerleading. And they just launched this cycling website, Flow Bikes. So, yeah, our first live event, or I guess our first two live events, just occurred over the last month. We live streamed Rochester and across Vegas, and hoping to get some more live events and tell some more great stories of the sport as the site evolves.
Is the hope that it will turn into your sort of mobile television? I mean, that's sort of what it sounds like. It's like you'll be able to do this on demand, obviously. But when you say live events, this is it's like real time live?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think if you're in the cycling world, if you watching bike races or competitive cycling, then you are very familiar with the live streaming options out there, and most of them are not great. You know,
right.
Grainy feeds, you know, commentary, you know, pirated feeds, commentary that's in a different language. So Flow absolutely has an app, the Flow Sports app, and you can find Flow Bikes on the app. You can also watch it on your desktop. And that will be live streaming competitive bike racing on those platforms.
That's going to be pretty exciting, because I remember, I think it started out with something like UVerse or something like that. You could subscribe for like a race or an event. And now you're saying that we could tune in when anything's going on. So you're going to send people out of the country too?
That's the hope. That's certainly the hope. You know, as we both know, the best bike racing in the world, most of it takes place in Europe and around the world. So, yeah, those are definitely events we want to be showing on Flow Bikes. With most of those events, the promoter is actually creating the stream. They're, you know, hiring the production company to film the race, and then they're just sending that out to whatever various providers. So for the biggest events, we would just be picking up the stream from the actual event. But we will also plan to be, for the largest races, you know, be on site talking with athletes, you know, doing coverage around the event, you know, before, during, and after the event. And, you know, it won't just be, and that's, you know, that's really my job, is that it's not just, you know, a bike race coming to your phone as a standalone event. You can, you know, look up who the competitors are, what their backstory is, you know, what are the storylines in the race, you know, what does all this mean? So, we really hope to tell the story of cycling in a compelling and interesting way, while, you know, at the same time drawing people into the races that are happening in time.
I'm speaking with Ian Dilley. He is the new, I'm going to call you the executive producer of Flow Bikes. Is that a good title?
You know, I wear a lot of hats at the Flow Bikes right now. I, you know, during Cross Vegas, I did a little bit of everything, from commentary to, you know, producing the show and how it was shot and, you know, doing live interviews with the athletes after the race. And so, yeah, that's fine. I'm technically the senior editor, but, you know, as we grow, I'm sure that title will evolve.
Well, that I want to talk about the growth. So eventually you're going to have contributors, I would assume. Do you already have some?
We do. I'm really happy with some of our contributors. You know, we have Molly Herford. She's been covering cyclocross for us and doing some really nice pieces, looking at the racers and, you know, covering the events, you know, afterwards, and really diving into not just this is what happened, but this is what this means for the overall cyclocross season for these racers, and really giving some context around the athletes and the events. And we've also, you know, live or not live, but athlete interviews are kind of at the core of what Flo does across their different sports, and, you know, really allowing athletes to tell their own story and give us, you know, some insight into how the race played out from their perspective. So that's been really great. We're excited to have her working for us. And we've also had Catherine Hunter, who's a former professional women's road racer, contributing to the site. She did a couple of nice pieces about the Women's World Championship. So, yeah, I would encourage anybody to go look up that content, and hopefully they'll enjoy it.
This is a subscription site. Is that the way it works? So you subscribe to Flo Bikes?
So, yeah, the subscription is, you know, similar to what you might pay for other, you know, content that you get on your phone from HBO or Netflix. And, you know, the idea is that it's really what you want to watch, the thing that you want to watch on demand, and you're not, you know, rooting around trying to look for something all over the internet, and it's just right there on your phone. You know, you can pull up the event that you want to see real time. And I should also say, you know, we also provide full replays of the events afterwards.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I had another question about whether or not this is strictly competitive events. So all you're not covering the whole gamut of cycling. You're just covering competition, whether it be track or road or cross, or will you do things like the Olympic stuff, that too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Flo Bike's primary focus, and certainly the primary focus starting off, is competition. But myself being a competitive cyclist somebody who rides a bike in general for a variety of different reasons, commuting to work, you know, just for fun, adventure, whatever else, I certainly understand that bike racers are not solely competitive focused. So, you know, as the site grows, we certainly hope to cover, you know, lifestyle elements of the sport and other elements of the sport that are important to cyclists. We recently had the CEO of USA Cycling, Derek Bouchard Hall, at the Flo Sports headquarters and did a studio show with him. And, you know, we talked about, you know, safety issues facing cyclists on the open roads. And, you know, that's something that's at the forefront of every cyclist's mind. So, we definitely will not be tone deaf to issues beyond competition.
It is cycling TV on your phone. I mean, it's just, I really like the concept very, very much. So what's going to happen with some of the things you used to do? You've written a couple of really good books that we've reviewed on the show, The Cyclist's Bucket List and The Price of Gold. And the way I found you was through an investigative story I thought you did for, not even for a cycling publication. It had to do with cities, as I remember.
The past 6 years, I've done the best bike cities, the top 50 best bike cities list for Bicycling Magazine, and definitely very proud of that work. Kind of as that project evolved, the level of data that we were able to get, you know, the amount of work that went into interviewing, you know, various city officials and cycling advocates, you know, I felt like we created a very comprehensive and informative ranking of, you know, who was doing the most to transform their transportation networks across the U.S. And so, yeah, I had to let that project go as I took this new position with Flow Bikes. I'll be working entirely for Flow Bikes and won't be freelancing anymore, which was certainly a hard decision to make, but also very excited about the opportunity at Flow Sports and what we can do.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the content. I know you can go online right now and look at, it's actually Flow Bike. There is no S, as I remember, on the site, flowbike.com.
There's an S.
Is there? Because I tried to tell, okay.
Yeah.
And you can go to Flow Bikes and subscribe right now. Is that correct?
You can. Currently, we don't have, an event lineup published. We're in the process of working on one. You know, we have a rights acquisition manager that is working with various, you know, event promoters and the people that own the rights to broadcast these events digitally. So, I would say stay tuned. Keep visiting the site, flowbikes.com, because we do have content and we'll have content there on a daily basis. And we hope to have some exciting news shortly in terms of what live events we'll be covering through the rest of 2017 and into 2018. And I would also encourage everybody to right now, we've got a really cool video that we did of the Driveway Series here in Austin. It was voted the most popular bike race in the country by a competition held by USA Cycling. So, that's a fun, quick video that kind of gives a glimpse of what we are doing in the future with Flow Bikes.
You said something that just brought something up for me, and that is, are you getting any pushback from any of these producers about you streaming their stuff? Or it's just ongoing negotiations?
Definitely no pushback. These are paid contracts that are hammered out by lawyers, and so we're definitely not, taking streams and putting them up on Flow Bikes by any measure. This is a professional organization that is.
Yeah, of course.
Working to give a platform to promoters and help build media value in their events. And generally, they're happy to have it broadcast on our site. And I will say, the feedback and that we have received that we take very seriously from, people that subscribe for Cross Vegas and Rochester is that they're happy to pay to get the service to see the race, but it has to be of high quality if you're charging a subscription fee. So that's something we take very seriously and are, working hard on providing the highest quality possible.
Yeah, sure. That makes perfect sense. I'm wondering, are you going to be having sponsors on the site, or is it going to be solely paid for by subscription?
I have heard, and again, this is not my exact area. We definitely have an ad sales team. I've heard 30% of the company's revenue is from ad sales. There's actually just a big feature story in Inc. magazine about Flow Sports and their model and what they're doing.
Nice.
So, if your listeners want to learn more about the company and its origins and its background, pick up a copy of Inc. magazine and that'll give quite a bit of information. But there will be ads on the site, and but the main focus is subscriptions, and that's where the bulk of the revenue will be coming from.
Yeah, there is a button at the bottom of the site that says advertise, but it is not a very prominent part of the site. And they even ask for media inquiries, which is kind of nice, considering I feel like I'm media sometimes. Well, Ian, as always, it's wonderful to talk with you. Congratulations on your new position, I think. Now you get to stay home more. Is that true? Are you just more stable in your life?
There's definitely an element of stability. As I said, I have been a freelancer my entire career as a writer, the past 10 years. So, there's an element of stability here. There's, an office that I am at on a weekly basis, daily basis. So certainly in terms of travel, I will be at the events and around the events, and hope to meet some of your listeners there and get some of their feedback and ways that we can improve, or stories that we should be covering, and definitely want ideas.
Well, thanks so much for talking with me today. Ian Dilley, flowbikes.com, new subscription site for cycling. And it's good to see something that might bring a lot of things together where you used to have to hunt and peck to get coverage. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Diane.
All right. You have a great afternoon.
Okay. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Yes, bye.
Ian Dilley joined me from the offices of Flow Bikes in Austin, Texas. I'm looking forward to seeing how they expand the concept of digital access to more cycling. Let's take a short break, and we'll be right back to talk with Brian.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
Back on The Outspoken Cyclist, I am sitting across from, or he is sitting across from me, Brian, my husband. Hey, how are you today?
So far, so good.
So far, so good. I thought this might be a good opportunity to chat about a few things, like top of the mind kind of rants and conversations that you and I have only all the time and have for the last almost 20 years.
Well, I think that those rants come easiest when we're driving in a car after 10 hours and you get me started. So I don't know about ranting this morning.
You mean like when we were driving back from Boston this past weekend?
What did I rant about?
I don't think you actually ranted about anything, but we did have a long drive.
Both ways.
Both ways. That is correct. Out to Boston and back. I thought the Builder's Ball was an interesting show, considering all the shows we've been to and all the shows we've done ourselves where we've been participating. It was a little bit different. Did you like Boston? Well, you like Boston.
No, I like Boston. Yeah.
All right. Well, it is fall, and I think that one of the topics in fall for people is, should they still ride or should they put their bike away?
Oh, they should still ride.
Yeah? Why do you think that?
There's no reason not to ride. Just keep riding.
Well, let's talk about the kinds of things that keep people from riding. Maybe tires, maybe they're cold, maybe it's getting dark.
If their tires are wrong, they need to put the right ones on. If it's getting cold, they need to dress warm. If it's getting dark, they need lights and reflectors.
Okay, so let's talk about lights and reflectors for a second. There are a lot of things out there right now. You have recently put a generator wheel on the front of our tandem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's a good idea for just about anybody? It's not an inexpensive option.
It's not terribly expensive. Battery technology today is getting really good, so batteries are certainly a good way to do it, too.
Yeah, but you can also use the generator hub, I think, to charge things.
Sure, you can charge your GPS and your phone, and yeah.
Are we technology geeks now?
Well, we're not doing that. We're just charging. We're just powering a headlamp for now.
Right. But I meant in general, are cyclists becoming technology geeks?
With all the electronic shifting and, the dashboard. You can have a whole dashboard of stuff on your bike now. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You run out of real estate.
Real estate, right.
Right. No place for your hands.
Well, that's okay. Your hands are occupied with pushing buttons on all your equipment, so...
That's true. So what kinds of things should people do in fall to keep their bikes running on the road? You have things like leaves and water, and as it gets colder, of course, snow and ice.
Yeah, it's true. As it gets really cold, you have to watch out for ice, and there are piles of leaves and sand that blow across the road. These are just hazards that you may be more common in the fall than they are other times, in the spring and the probably just the summer, but this is normal stuff for any time of year. Fall is arguably the best time of year for riding. It's easier to keep your, maintain your core temperature. In the summertime, it's very difficult. If it's hot, it's tough to cool down. In the wintertime, it can be really cold. This time of year, With proper clothing, it's usually pretty easy to stay comfortable.
True. You can always layer it up, start off in the morning a little bit with a few more things like arm warmers, leg warmers, that kind of thing. All right. Well, that topic is pretty easy to
beat. Yeah. To beat to death.
To beat to death, and as we do with some things. You mentioned DI2. Well, you didn't mention DI2. You mentioned electronic shifting. What are you finding about that? Do you like it?
I don't use it.
Okay. Let me rephrase the question. Your customers like it. Your clients like
some
it.
Some do. Yeah.
Yeah. So the evolution of electronic shifting, because I can remember way, way, way back, Mavic had something called...
The original was called Zap, I think.
Zap.
Yeah, they had the Zap. That was going on 25 years, I think. And then about 20-ish years ago, they came out with Mektronik.
Mektronik. Yeah. I remember that. And now we have DI2 trickling down from Durace to Altegra. Is it going to go further?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't see why it would, but I don't know.
Who knows what
Shimano's going to do?
Who knows? Well, but Shimano isn't the only manufacturer out there.
Well, but you're asking about DI2.
That's true. I guess I should rephrase it about electronic in general. So Campy's electronic is pretty much shifting only for racing.
Well, Campy decided years ago that they were very racing oriented, pretty much racing only.
Well, one of the things that's happened, which I didn't realize, is the everybody's going to compact cranks, pretty much doubles as opposed to.
Yeah, with the wide ratios, with 11 speed and up now, people are going to fewer and fewer chain rings. They're pushing. They say that they're pushing for a single chain ring, no front derailleur at all, eventually.
Yeah, I saw online just yesterday, Phil Wood introduced something with some outrageous 13 speed cassette.
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. It's blue and yellow cogs. It's really kind of pretty, but it's like this gigantic pie plate in the back of the back. So I know you've changed the gearing on our tandem and are thinking about going to a double up front. We have a triple now.
Our tandem drivetrain's a little complicated, but we need those low gears. You and I do.
Hey, are you saying I don't pedal?
No, you pedal. I don't give you any choice in that. It's just a matter of how much force you put out.
I'm hearing a complaint here?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. So what kind of ratios, and that is a problem, tandem riders, if there are other tandem riders out there, tandem components seem to be very scarce.
Well, it appears this has been the case for years, and we may be in... As far as tandems go, in the worst position we've been in years, the manufacturers just don't seem to have the market's just too small. They have no interest in supporting tandems.
And yet, tandem riders are rabidly tandem, like you and I. I mean, we really like riding our tandem.
Oh, sure.
But you seem to be finding solutions. So, what are you thinking about?
The little tiny tandem segment of the industry is innovative and constantly looking for ways to get around the rest of the industry's lack of interest in supporting tandems. You know, companies like Comotion and Santana, they've all gone to developing their own standards and in many cases making their own components.
That's true. Santana has been a leader in that for a long time.
Yeah.
So what kind of gearing? All right. So everybody who listens pretty much knows that you and I are going to Israel next month, which is tomorrow.
Well, if they didn't, they do now.
They do now. Yeah. And that we are riding in some pretty mountainous territories. You're not going to make any changes to our bike, huh?
Every few days when I find some time, I look for places on the bike to improve it. But as far as our climbing and our drivetrain, no. I'm not making any changes between now and then.
I know the question's going to come up. Because people listening to this will probably say, okay, what is your gearing? You probably do know off the top of your head.
Right now I don't remember. I think it's a 50, the front is a triple, of course. I think it's a 50, 40, 430. And the rear, I just changed it.
See?
We have two cassettes on two sets of wheels and I just took one cassette and swapped it on the wheels. And I think right now it's an 11 or 12 by 36. I think.
And those cassettes are getting wider. What about derailleurs? I mean, ours works great. And by the way, we use Brian uses Barrens on our bike. It's not electronic or even STI. Well,
right. Bar and shifters is what you're referring to.
Right.
The main reason for that on our bike is you're not limited by the front derailleur's action, you know, being compatible with a shifter. The front shifter of a bar end is, it's friction, so you can operate almost any derailleur you want with it.
And we've got, I'm trying to remember, we have SRAM on there?
We have a SRAM rear derailleur, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a, sort of a hodgepodge.
Mm-hmm.
Typical mechanics bike.
Most of our bikes are, yeah.
Yeah, right. Typical mechanics bike. What's your favorite bike right now?
I like the Tandem. But,
well, yeah.
But, you know, I built a new beater winter riding Waterford a couple of years ago and found that with a little tweaking, I like that.
I would dance around that word beater.
Well, it was originally intended to be a beater, but it turned out to be a nice bike.
Yeah, so, it's stunning. Yeah. It's perfect for fall. It's like orange.
It is orange.
It is orange. And it is a Waterford. Yeah.
Yeah.
So why do you have two Waterfords. You have your beautiful lugged stainless steel lug, polished lug mm-hmm. bike with your, yep. yeah, it's really pretty. Mm-hmm. And then you have the orange one, which is actually a TIG welded frame.
Mm-hmm.
What about the orange one are you liking better than your red bike, or are you liking equally as well?
It's more modern. You know, the red bike that I built 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's longer ago than that.
And I think it was 15 years ago.
Okay.
2002. Pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful paint job, and it's polished stainless lugs, like you said. It's all steel. It uses parts vintage to the time. It was my own, as everyone called it, the Shimergo solution, which we discussed on the show not long ago. It has that on it. It has a combination of original 9-speed Durace with Campy Record, and I think it's got chorus controls on it because I like the aluminum blades. I think it's got Record brakes and I don't even remember. It's Durace and Record mostly.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of an interesting combination of classic looking stuff or classic, you know, build style with what at the time was fairly modern and high end stuff. And I've liked the bike. It's a racing double. The chainring is a 5339. And I've always liked the bike. I love the bike. It's the one bike I've had over the years that every time I get on it, within seconds, I can close my eyes and it's like a perfectly fitting suit instantly. And I can ride it 100 miles comfortably. So it's a great bike and it's been that way for years. But it was, given the components are beautiful and still in great shape and in a certain sense not replaceable in the same way anymore, I wanted to keep it nice and not have that be the kind of bike I was riding. I was doing more riding in the late fall and into the winter, and I didn't want that bike. And it's got skinny tires on it, 25s. I didn't want that to be my winter riding bike, and I was in shape, and I wanted to maintain that into the winter. So, as you may remember, I said, you know, here's an opportunity to build another bike somewhat inexpensively with, I put this new Waterford, I put less expensive parts on it, and it was supposed to be a beater. It's TIG welded.
Wider tires,
yeah. Yeah.
Used Paul brakes?
It has Paul medium, racer mediums on it. Yep, center pole racer mediums.
So when you ride it, and I've heard you say this more often lately, more and more lately, that you just really like riding the bike. What would you characterize are the differences between the two?
Well, I designed the geometry to match pretty closely the red one. I mean, it accommodates the wider tires, that kind of thing. But as far as the handling, the feel, the fit is virtually identical. So in that sense, I'm going to like the bike, and I do like the bike the same way I like the red one. But it has, you know, I ended up putting 11-speed on it with a wider range, and it's got a compact on it, which I had not had before. And I wanted to get used to the compact. So I've come to like the bike. And, of course, I've got the wider tires on it, and now I've converted them to tubeless, which I like. They feel great. And the bike, it's fun to ride.
Yeah, remember Matt Crompton, the guy who lives in Australia, mentioned when he was here in the studio that he believes everything will be tubeless in 10 years. Do you think that's true?
To say everything will be tubeless in 10 years, We definitely will see a lot more tubeless and possibly mostly tubeless. Tubeless is working out. More and more tire manufacturers are making great tubeless tires, and they feel great. They ride well. They appear, you know, they're lighter. They're nice. They're really nice. But there's a hassle factor there that I'm not sure we're going to resolve for every bike. You know, your less expensive bikes that actually get people into riding, the people who want to be able to get on the bike and ride it to the grocery store or the ice cream shop. I think, you know, if you're selling your $400, $500 bikes to these people, they're not going to want to mess around with the tubeless system. But it's hard to predict, you know, that they may continue to develop in a way that is, you know, it is true that they're less flat prone, you know, they're self-sealing. That's how tubeless works. It may work out that way.
What's the hassle factor?
The sealant, dealing with the sealant. You have to, they're tighter on the rim, so they're more difficult to install and remove. And you have to be able to blast, you know, compressor helps a lot to blast a tremendous amount of air in there very quickly to bring the tire to pressure. You have to seat those beads and then deflate them and then put the sealant in and reinflate them and get the sealant to seal it all up.
Hmm.
And it's not a big deal, but it is not the same as just putting a tube in, inflating it, and going. But these, you can do that. If you get in a, if these go flat, you can put a tube in it on the side of the road. That's not an issue. They work exactly the same way.
Oh, so it's a dual system. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's still, you just put a, it's got sealant in it, but if it does get a flat, you just put a tube in it, you know, and go.
What happens around the valve hole with the tubeless?
Well, before when?
When there's no tube.
Well, there's a valve.
Oh, of course, you have to still inflate the tire,
yeah,
Diane.
There's a separate valve that seals in that spot.
Duh. Yeah. Okay.
So obviously, if you get a flat and you want to put a tube in there, you just have to remove that valve and put a tube with a valve in it.
So if somebody was thinking of converting to tubeless, you would have to have the proper rim. It's a special rim.
There's a system out there that will convert quite a few rims, I guess, to tubeless or attempt to. But for the most part, yeah, it works best to have a rim that's a rim. And very important, the tire itself is designed for tubeless.
Are OEM bikes coming with tubeless now?
I don't know.
Me
you
neither.
Know, I don't know anything about OEM these days.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up this conversation, but I think it's interesting for those thinking about tubeless. You might want to look into it. You will have to change your rims probably, but whatever.
Well, usually when I build a new bike, I tend to recommend or build new wheels whenever possible. I'll try and direct somebody toward a tubeless compatible rim, even if they don't want to run tubeless now. At least in the future, if they decide to, the wheels are capable of it.
There are other things about rims I'd like to know about. I wish we had more time because I would like to talk about the idea of rims being disc only as opposed to rim brake, because you have thoughts on that. So will you come back and have a conversation about that soon? I know you have to get going.
I'll maybe let you try and talk me into it.
Okay, fine. Thanks. Thanks for bringing me to the studio this morning. We will come back and revisit that topic at a later date. Okay. We'll be wrapping it up.
Okay.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
So Brian has to move on for the day. We're going to take another short break here on the show and then head over the pond to London, England to speak with author Paul Maunder about his new book, Rainbows in the Mud. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit doddcamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
So here we are in England. I have on the line with me author Paul Maunder, and we're going to talk about his new book, Rainbows in the Mud and Cyclocross. Hi, Paul. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. How's London this evening?
London is quite a sunny evening, but bracing for rain tomorrow. It's rain forecast the whole weekend, so nothing changes really.
The more it changes, the more it stays the same, huh?
Yeah.
So we have cyclocross season in full bloom here at the KMC Crossfest, which used to be called something else. I think it was called the Providence Cyclocross Fest. Is coming up this weekend. It's really nice.
Okay,
go ahead.
No, that's a good race. I've not been there, but I've seen it online a few times.
Well, it's nice to see a comprehensive book about the sport. And we are going to talk about Rainbows in the Mud, inside the intoxicating world of cyclocross. But I'd like to fill in some of the background for my listeners. My listeners really like to know about the people who write these books because they are always interesting characters. Tell us a little bit about you and your cycling history.
Okay, so I was born in Oxford and City of Dreaming Spires, and grew up in a little village near Oxford. And I've been in love with the sport since I was 10 years old, which is over 30 years now. My memory is that I saw the World Championships, the World Road Championships from Barcelona on BBC One when I was in 1984. It was love at first sight, one of those strange chemical reactions you can't quite explain. And started to race, started to ride a bike. My first race was actually a cross race when I was 11. And I did, as is often the way of things, when I got to 18 in university, I got into the usual bad habits and gave up the monkish lifestyle that racing demands. But I've always been in love with the sport ever since and followed it and now happy to write about it.
One of the things I read was that this first race you did that you won chocolate bars. I thought that was kind of an interesting prize.
Yeah, but I think, yes, but it ticks all the boxes, right? Because it is cheap for the organisers and the lads who win it are happy. So I think I won 3 Mars bars. I think you have Mars bars over there in the States, don't you?
Mars bars. Wow, they even have those in England, huh? Okay, that's good. So I wanted to talk a moment about an article that you wrote back in May of 2016. You actually wrote the article for Roller. It's How Not to Write a Novel About Cycling. I found it really interesting, and it's sort of indicative of the style of your writing. Tell us a little bit about that article and how it kind of fits into the writing you've done and are currently doing.
The idea behind that article was that I've been writing fiction for many years. I've written 4 or 5 novels and comprehensively failed to win the Man Booker Prize or any other major prizes, but learned a lot along the way. And I was looking at writing a novel about cycling and trying to develop some ideas, but what I quickly came to realise is that any novel I would write about cycle racing would just be full of tactical manoeuvres and gradients of hills and carbon fibre rims, and it would be utterly dull as fiction. And the problem with sports and fiction is that I think what moves us in sports is very immediate and very different and very visceral and very different to what moves us in fiction, which is actually about people and emotion. There are some great cycling stories that have been put into fiction, notably The Rider by Tim Craver and Breaking Away, the classic American film. But actually those books are also both about people rather than really about the sports. But what that sort of process has helped me to think through is the fact that when I'm writing about cycling,
the people's stories are the most interesting part. And so hopefully I've tried to convey that in Rainbows in the Mud 2 and my various writings for Rouleau and others, that actually it's the people and ordinary people as well often. And that's part of the reason why in Rainbows in the Mud I didn't really go for Sven Nice and all the other megastars, because I sensed that I would get quite kind of corporate, perhaps quite bland sound bites from those guys, whereas that's the people who I did talk to, like Katie Compton, were very honest and frank and gave me a lot of their time.
Right. I would totally agree. You know, you go up to any of these big UCI team members or these Continental team members, and they have been told what to say and what not to say. You may or may not get a heartfelt answer to any of your questions. So why don't you set the background for Rainbows in the Mud? I want to know how you came up with the title, too. I think it's really a cool title, Rainbows in the Mud, Inside the Intoxicating World of Cyclocross, and the fact that you find cyclocross intoxicating. How did you come up with that?
For a long time, it was actually the title was something else. It was Super Prestige, which is not very good as a title because it doesn't really explain anything, but it's just a really cool word.
It is a cool word.
the Super Prestige series in Belgium have probably trademarked that word and copyrighted it. But secondly, as I said, it didn't really explain what was going on inside the book, so we ditched that. I think the Rainbows in the Mud really came from the fact that by the end of the season I was chronicling, I realised how much of it had been building up to the World Championships and how much of the cyclocross, how the rhythm of the cyclocross season is all about that build-up to the Worlds, which is a very different thing to the road season, which has become quite elongated and bloated and no rider can ever be on form for the whole season. Cross is very much about the World Championships and that rainbow jersey as an emblem of success. And in terms of the intoxicating world, clearly there's a double meaning there. It's intoxicating because you grow to love the sport, and the more you get into it, the more you can want to consume all the details and the culture of the sport. It's also intoxicating because there are a lot of people who were roaring drunk that year and every year.
I was just going to say, why is that year different? Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Paul Maunder. His book, Rainbows in the Mud, Inside the Intoxicating World of Cyclocross, was just published on September 5th. It's a really interesting book, and it's, you know, you write really well. I mean, I like good writing. Everybody who listens to the show knows I like really good writing, and I like the way you write. I want to go back to something you said about cyclocross building up to the Worlds. And as I think back over cycling for the many years I've been in the business of the bike industry, it seems to be world championships used to mean something for road two and for track and for all of the disciplines, and that something did change. And I'm not sure what that was. Do you have any insight into that?
I still think the rainbow jersey does have a tremendous power and lure in the world in road racing. I think the move of the World Championships from August to the end of September didn't help, and I think also the World Championship has become a product of whatever course it's on. So if it's a very hilly course, as in next year in Austria, only a certain group of riders can go for it. So in a way, it's not really a true World Championship, whereas in cyclocross, really whatever course it's on, everyone accepts that the best man wins, or woman wins on the day. I think track perhaps has been a bit eclipsed by the Olympics. I think some of the hype, maybe in this country, the hype around British cycling and the Olympics has perhaps eclipsed the World Championships, which is a shame.
Yeah. It is. Well, let's get back to your book, because it is the book of the moment here, and I really like it. You use the 2015-16 cross season as the setting. Let's set the main characters and how you chose them. So tell us who they are and why you picked those people.
Absolutely. So I was trying to get inside the sport and see it from a couple of different perspectives. So I was very conscious that the book would be published in UK and US, and that it would be nice to get both sides of the story, the transatlantic story, as it were. And also what intrigued me is the way that the challenges and the cultural challenges that American riders have coming over to Europe to race. And so I, one of the main characters is a young guy called Gage Hecht, who's now, who was a junior at the time, is now a under 23 rider, or U23, as I believe you say.
Right.
And then another rider was Katie Compton, as I mentioned earlier. And Katie, obviously, vastly experienced, tremendously successful throughout her career, now coming towards the end of her career, although shows no signs really of slowing down. And in a way, I got rather lucky with in choosing Katie as a someone to talk to, because she had a fascinating backstory about her health and the challenges she's had in diagnosing her health issues quite recently, which came to bear in that season. And then there's a whole sort of host of supporting characters. There's a young English rider called Dan Tullett, who actually lives quite near me. And he had a pretty disastrous season, but has subsequently gone on to win silver medal at the World Championships this year. And then, yeah, as I say, a whole host of other characters, like, for instance, the Kevin Powell's Supporters Club, who I hooked up with in Belgium, and turned out actually to be mostly Kevin's family. And we had good fun. And that, I think that helped me to get under the skin a little bit of the sport in Belgium. I think, as anyone who knows the sport would attest, it takes years and years and years, really, to really get to know the nuance, the finer nuances of the sport in Belgium. But hopefully I did a good enough job for one season.
Oh, I believe you did. You know, when people watch cross racing, it's interesting how cross racing is growing in the United States. I think it's probably very different because it's not a new sport in Europe. But, you know, there are local little cross races. People will just take a field and, you know, just rope it off in certain ways and call it a cross course.
Really?
You know, it's sort of like grassroots racing in a way that almost anybody can participate, which is one of the things I really like about it. So as it grows in popularity, do you think that cyclocross could eclipse some of the other cycling disciplines?
I hesitate to say the elite racing will ever be as popular as the Grand Tours and the big classics and so on. But I think at a grassroots and participation level, it's seeing such huge growth both in the US and UK that some of the races here in London have 500 or 600 people turn up
wow.
on Sunday in a park in South London. And as soon as the entries go online, it sells out within a couple of hours. And also because it's so good for kids and so accessible, great way to learn to ride your bike. Families are more keen to get involved. So I think, it's a very much an accessible sport and could grow. My only, I think its only constraint is that it needs almost a non-competitive side to it. So, you know, road racing, everyone knows, is pretty hard and pretty miserable if you get spat out of the back of the peloton. Cross racing is good fun and no one really minds where you are, how many times you've been lapped. Everyone's just going around having good fun. But I think I still think the racing aspect of it puts people off. If there was a way we could find to make it more of a leisure pastime, and actually people just ride in parks and enjoy it and maybe have a few technical challenges along the way, then it would really take off. Now, I know in the States, gravel riding is a big new thing. In Britain, we don't really have, it's more mud than gravel, let's put it that way.
Mud than gravel? That's because it rains more? Is that the reason?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Well, are you still riding and racing?
I ride, I don't race. Yeah, so I keep toying with the idea of making a, well, I say make a comeback, but that sounds overly dramatic. My worry is that the amount of energy and OCD obsession I would put into racing would preclude me from doing pretty much everything else in life. So my kids probably wouldn't thank me for it.
Yeah, probably not. But then again, you know, Dad could be a really popular guy. He'd be okay in the mud and the dirt and the rain and the slush.
Yeah.
Which is one of the cool things about cyclocross. It is the only part of cycling that is wintertime. So, you know, you can end up riding your bike year round if you get into cyclocross, which you cannot do with the other, you know, disciplines.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can race all year round, and it keeps you mentally fresh. And I think also in the past, the roadies used to think, well, I need to do 10,000 kilometres by January or whatever. But now those training methods are rather outdated, and we all know that it's not really just about pure distance. It's about quality of your training. And what better way than to do some very serious efforts just for an hour or hour and a half on a Sunday morning. Keeps you ticking over until the road season starts. So it works for everyone.
Well, you know, the book is really, really interesting. And it, as I said, it's beautifully written. There are, for the folks who like pictures, there are no pictures. It is all prose and well written. It's documented. So you get a lot of references in the back of the book. It's got a pretty cover, although Paul wanted a better cover. He thought it wasn't artistic enough. But when you look at all the jerseys, you know, it's pretty colorful. Rainbows in the mud. I can see where it came from. I did have a couple more questions for you, because all my fun guests, I ask these questions. You allude to the book that you eat chips with mayonnaise. What is that all about? Seriously?
How can you even ask that question? That's what you do in Belgium.
Oh, I'm not in Belgium. I've never been to Belgium. Oh. I have to admit. I guess I need to do that.
You should come. Yeah, we'll treat you to some chips and mayonnaise. the mayonnaise is actually the most mainstream option. There are a lot of other more mysterious sauces that you can have with your chips, which I didn't invent. There were various colours, kind of a beige, a pink, with a pepper sauce. Very odd sauces, but stick with mayonnaise, you'll be fine.
You won't go wrong with mayonnaise. Okay, so, but what is your favourite food?
My favourite food? Well, I've got a very sweet tooth, so it would be chocolate.
Oh, you know what? You're the second person this year who has said chocolate. That's cool. The other person was a lady, I think, a girl, yeah. And so what kind of music do you like?
Music? I recently got into, something we call over here in Britain, Northern Soul, which probably doesn't mean much stateside, but it's basically Soul, Detroit, and Motown Soul.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Okay, yeah. And my last question is... go ahead.
Yeah, okay.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say we call it Northern Soul because in Britain there was a big scene up in the dance halls up in kind of Yorkshire and Lancashire and the very working class northern towns. And at the weekend they would go out and dance to soul all night. That was in the 70s, so a bit before my time.
Nice. Do you have any pets?
No, just kids.
Well, never mind. We won't go there. All right. The most important question is, where can people get copies of the book?
Okay, so you can get the book at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and the Bloomsbury site.
Right. It is a Bloomsbury title, and we do have quite a few authors on the show who work with Bloomsbury Press. It is Rainbows in the Mud, Inside the Intoxicating World of Cyclocross by Paul Maunder, who is in London today while we're here in the States. And I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with me. I'm sorry our Skype interview ended up being a phone interview, but when it all comes together, it'll sound fine.
Fantastic.
Thanks so much. Have a wonderful evening. I know it's late over there, so get some rest and go for a ride.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Goodbye.
That's our show for this evening. I'd like to thank Paul Maunder, Ian Dilley, and Brian for joining me today. I will be back next week with a brand new show. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. And remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.